Now, we're going to jump over to another topic here, which is the Great Beef Wars of 2025. We've got a gentleman who's going to join us on the line now, who's a fifth-generation cattle rancher named Steve Lucy. Steve, welcome to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Well, glad to have you. So we started going back and forth when this beef discussion popped up, and I saw I saw what was unfolding on social media. I don't spend as much time in corporate media, but I saw some of that too. I saw what was happening in the political landscape, and suddenly it's Donald Trump has turned his back on ranchers. He's anti-MAGA, and he's working for JBS. Now nobody knows who JBS is, but just to give 1 second of background. The way this industry works, you've got cattle ranchers who grow the cattle, raise the cattle, and then they have to deliver those to a processor, right? And those processors then, process the cattle, create the beef, and pack the beef. And so in this mix, you've got the rancher, you've got the beef processor, who's also the packer, you've got the retailer, and then you've got the government. And it's been hammering on these ranches for decades.
Yeah.
So Steve, the question I have for you just out of the gate is, give us a sense of what it's been like, over this last, 40 years, which is what we've been looking at the numbers for, to be a cattle rancher in the United States. What's going on?
Well, I'll tell you, you left out one important person or one important group in that, and that's the consumer.
Yes.
The consumer, the final person in the food chain of this whole system. And, that's where we kind of got in the mix up last week, just talking about we need the price to go down for the consumers. And, people can say what they want about the president. You got to give him credit for at least looking at that and saying, I understand consumers are having to pay a lot for their beef. But to answer your question about the last 40 years, it's just the same as it's been for the generation ahead of me. It's not easy. You're always working on tight margins. You're looking to, have the most production that you can for the cheapest input cost that you can and put out the best product that you can.
Mm-hmm.
So the cattle cycle is usually, it's a 7 to 10 year cycle. You'll have highs and lows within that 7 to 10 year range. And recently, we've not busted that cycle of highs. So everything just kept going up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're in now of having people pay high price for beef. Now, on the flip side of that, this is the last 4 or 5 years, especially under the Biden administration, we saw a tremendous war on cattle. That's what I call it. You see it on my social media.
Yep.
We had regulations coming at us. We had people telling you that cattle were, harmful for the environment, which is the actual opposite of what's actually going on. The cattle, where we battle in a sustained way, it's actually the best thing for our environment. And now we finally figured that out. We've got some studies out of University of Nebraska and places that actually show that. So people have started listening. But when that war on cattle was going on and we weren't making any money in the cattle business, people don't want to stay in the business. And that's what's happened. The herd has shrunk down to low levels from like as low as it was in the 1950s. So that is why there's been a low supply of beef. And ultimately, that's why the price has climbed. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. So if you look at that, I just went back 40 years, 1985 to 2024, and looking at the beef cattle herd, it went from around, let's say, in 1985, 33 million head. It spiked a little bit in the, call it like the 90 time, up to almost 35 million head. And then it just took a 45-degree downward angle, a little bump at the end, but now it's down to 28. So it's been a really substantial decline in the number of cattle in the country for the beef herd. But if you look at the overall cattle herd, which includes dairy and the others, it's the same pattern. So what we've done is we've added 100 million people in those 40 years. And we've taken out tens of millions of cattle, overall about 30 million cattle, from the herd that would be here in the U.S. Is that about right, Steve?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what's happened, I don't know if you all remember, but back through the Carter administration, we had some terrible trouble with agriculture. We lost a lot of farm. You know, they started Farm Aid and stuff like that in the early 80s. And my parents were paying 18% interest on operating money.
Yep.
And people were struggling. So that started the process of losing small family farms, which around the Midwest here where I'm at in Illinois and Iowa and Missouri and even Nebraska, there were a lot of small family farms, and they might have raised corn and soybeans, but they also had cattle. First thing that went was the cattle operation.
So oh, yeah.
That just continued until recent years when we had, you know, low prices and droughts out west. And, you know, also I heard you guys a segment before about this kind of social media, and we're projecting what young people, you know, can make and do. And we've seen that ramp up so much that we don't see young people want to stay on the farm and struggle through cycles of highs and lows, and even struggle through these sort of false things like the market had this dip last week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it too. You know, it's very difficult to get young people to stay in this business or come back to this business and go through those struggles, because you don't see big paychecks a lot of time. You have a nice life, a nice way of living.
Yeah.
It's out open country, and you have your freedom. That's different than if you were stuck in a small house in a city somewhere.
Yes.
But not everybody wants that.
We've lost the resilience in our kids, or the idea that hard work is valuable and worth doing with this generation coming up. I don't see it as much as we saw it before.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I see a lot of people complaining about, well, my kid can't get a job, my kid can't do this. And my kid is, we've got millions of blue-collar jobs available that they can make three figures, and they don't want to do that work. And then, you know, and I don't mean to be smart aleck that way. I just think that we have things that young people could look at and do. And I'm seeing a lot of difference around here in this rural area where I live now. Some of my neighbors and their kids that have grown up around here are starting to go to some trade schools. You know, there's a kid around here that just recently went to an electrical college down in Missouri, and they're going to come out, you know.
Oh, they're going to be very, very valuable.
I would actually say, so I'm 44, so I do feel like for my generation, it really ramped up that, you know, the only valuable thing you can do is go to college, and that, you know, going into the trades is something other people should do. But everyone in your, you know, community, everyone at your high school, they should all go to college and get bachelor degrees and professional jobs. It was almost like we watched this demeaning towards blue-collar jobs and trades that has just spread and continued on into the 2020s.
Well, there's another element. So you've discouraged American youth from going into these kind of careers that are hard work. And you've brought in millions and millions and millions of foreigners because they'll do it for a little less, and that helps the big packers.
Right.
Now, the World Economic Forum has an answer for all these problems, which is eat bugs, right? I mean, this war on carbon, this silly carbon story we've been fed for decades that we talked about in the first segment, you know, where Bill Gates has reversed entirely.
It's over now.
Their message was, look, you know, get a termite, put some hot sauce on it. Who knows? Might taste good. And, of course, in Asia, they eat bugs.
Listen, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, folks. There is bugs in your very high-profile brands right now, including pasta, drinks. It's called something other than bugs. It doesn't say bugs on your package, but there are bugs in your package.
No, there's no question. But we're not going to switch away from beef to bugs in lifetime.
Never.
But you've got a number of forces then that are hitting this hard. One is land cost, which has gone up dramatically as the Bill Gates of the Chinese Communist Party have begun buying a lot of land. I don't know if there's another ranch that's bigger than the Chinese Communist Party except the King Ranch in Texas. But you've got land, you've got equipment cost that's been affected by inflation. You've got, of course, feed cost has gone up because inflation. You got energy cost has gone up and labor cost has gone up. So you've really seen all of these economic pressures that affect every small business also affecting the rancher. Right, Steve, is that about right?
Yes, that's what I say oftentimes. You know, we have our costs go up just like everyone else's. And, you know, not to get in arguments with people that comment on a lot of our things they've seen me say on TV or different places, but it's okay if the rancher does make an income.
Yes. Please.
There's this kind of thought process out there that, you know, I've said it before, we're like just the help, right? We're supposed to be the help that grows the food and just gets by, and that's what we do. And you know what? We have a lot of money tied up in land. If that land were to be sold tomorrow, we would have money from that land. Then we would have to pay all our bills and our debts for borrowing the money to buy the land, but we would still have money. So people think just because farmers and ranchers have land that they are somehow these super wealthy people, but our day-to-day life is fairly common most of the time. We don't have cash flow a lot until we see some price jumps. And yeah, now we got a decent cash flow coming out of this cattle market, but we don't know how long it's going. And when we see the market being so fickle as to like sort of lean into some of the, like you talked about, some of the packers and those people, they want beef coming in from Argentina because they can make more money selling it to you than if they have to buy a quality calf from someone like me. Their margin gets tighter because my calf is valuable from coming out here on my ranch. All right. And they know that.
But and this beef processor issue is a very big issue. So if you were looking at these top four beef processors, that it's now four processors that in 1985 had about 32% of the market, and in 2024 had 80 to 85% of the market. So you've had massive consolidation in power amongst JBS, Tyson, Cargill, and National Beef. And as a result of that consolidation, what's, of course, predictable, you know, the price of beef has obviously gone up. It was, I think it was like $1.31 in 1985, and it's about, on average right now, $6.32 for a pound of ground beef across the country.
80-20.
But what's happened to the share of the dollar that's spent on beef? Well, if you go back to 1980, the rancher got 62%, and the processor got 20%. So, I mean, you know, all right, that kind of makes sense. You got a lot of costs at the ranch. In 2024, that shifted to where the rancher only gets 37% of the retail dollar spent on beef, and these processors get 43%. They've more than doubled their share of the revenue coming from that hamburger. So now you've got this real problem. You've got a consumer that's saying, listen, I can't afford to buy this stuff anymore. And then you've got the rancher saying, I'm having trouble making money selling it. And in the middle, you've got these giant multinational corporations with tremendous political power, tremendous market power, who have doubled their share of the earnings in the industry. So isn't it the consolidation that's been another major factor in this reduction of the herd because people can't make money and because they want to buy it overseas?
This is one of the biggest factors that we see, absolutely the biggest factor. And they have, you know, they sort of have you all, they have their boot on your throat.
Oh, yeah.
You can't, that's the problem. I have, so just to go back to some numbers, I sold a beef to a local person this summer, and I take it to just a local small family processor that have been in a small town here in Illinois for probably 60 years. And they are, these people are in their 70s. They're getting ready to have to do something. And she told me the other day when I took a beef in, they don't know if their family is going to take over that little processing facility. And that's going to be devastating to people in a 100-mile circle around me because they're the only ones really viable around here.
Yeah,
so, but I take a beef in and I sold it to the customer, and then the customer paid the processor.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the day, they had $6.20 a pound in the total package of beef. That's steak, ground beef, roast, everything. So there you can see the customer paid a really good price, had a reasonable price, because they're getting several ribeyes that are costing, you know, $20 a pound in the store. But they're getting that for $6.20 a pound.
Yeah,
so the problem is we need to have the infrastructure for that to happen in a mass scale, right?
And
we don't have that right.
Well, see, but this is a point that no one knows except the ranchers, which is that as you've seen that beef herd go down and you've seen the regulatory burden go up, and this regulation nightmare is a big, big part of this, they've driven these smaller processors out of business. So that put more and more market share in the hands of these big four.
More business for the big four.
So if that processor closed, how far will you have to haul beef to cattle to get it processed?
So that one there is about 45 miles from my house that I take down south of Quincy, Illinois. And I would probably be going, another 30, 40 miles to find a good processor, I'd say. I haven't really looked. I like these people so much, you know. I've got people that buy beef from me in the suburbs of Chicago and are willing to drive 4.5, 5 hours down to pick up their beef.
And I know a lot of folks that are now buying direct from the farm. In fact, I know a bunch. I was talking to some folks that are Vietnamese immigrants that came to the United States in 1975, and very, very patriotic Americans. They love this country because they've seen the alternative, and they sold their homes in North Dallas and moved to an area where they could all sort of live nearby each other, and where they say we could see where our beef was grown, where our crop, we could go direct to farm and buy the food we need. So no one would be between us and food. And that's because, this was in, call it 2020. They saw what was going to happen under Biden, and they weren't sure it was ever going to get stopped. So you've got ranchers now in some cases that are hauling their cattle as far as 1,000 miles. I'm told, I don't know if this is true, to get to a processor that they can get in line for to have their cattle processed. Because there's also, while there's excess capacity in the processor market, you might have to wait to get it because you might not have a good tournament score.
Absolutely. I believe that 100% that they would have to drive that far. I mean, another big part of the problem is, sort of your plan and my plan would be to have access to processors and ranchers like myself either grow or more of us pop up and we could take meat to the processor and somebody from the city could come and buy that. But if you think about that, we are kind of stuck there. We need to figure out how to do that because you've got a lot of people in my state, in the suburbs of Chicago and Chicago, that would be too many people to supply to. So
yes.
Therefore, these big packers do have a place because they can process the way they do.
Yes.
I think we have to in some kind of middle ground, though, to allow people to have the choice. Right now, they don't have a choice to get their beef, really. They have to to Costco.
It's a combination of economic factors where economies of scale have really helped build efficiencies into larger operations. So that's natural. But it's also been the capital they've invested to buy out their competitors because capital's been so cheap for the last 15 years or so. When you can borrow money for zero, for less than the rate of inflation, it's easy to go acquire your competitors and consolidate. So you've had massive consolidation, you've had shutdowns, and then you've had this regulatory burden that's not just added cost to the ranches, but it's made it harder to be a processor. And in fact, I think has driven a lot of the processing capacity out. These smaller processors just don't have the attorneys, the accountants, and the consultants that they need to deal with this collection of regulators that stand on their heads.
Well, that's very true. We have so much problem with regulation, and I mentioned it, before 5 years ago, for the last 4 or 5 years, the last administration was just a nightmare for regulations, and there were so many regulations, you couldn't keep track of them all, the WOTUS, the Clean Water Act, all kinds of different things that affected us, and that all adds up, But one thing that really, really, really frustrates a lot of people like myself is we do have a lot of big beef associations that are supposed to be lobbying for the rancher, but yet they won't lobby to get, for instance, country of origin labeling. So you know that you're buying a beef product from a rancher like me that originated in the United States. We can talk trade and imports and all that all we want, and we probably need some of that to keep everybody's food chain going. I don't think it should have been as big of a deal as what the market showed last week, because we really didn't change any fundamentals. It was drama and hype built up. But what it did do is put a spotlight on the fact that when we bring that beef in from Argentina or Brazil or wherever, you don't know that that's what's in your hamburger, and you should know that as a consumer.
I agree with that entirely. Just to touch on we've got about 4 minutes left, so I want to hit this import thing real hard, real quick. So what happened at the beginning of this year is that JBS made a $5 million investment in Trump's inauguration celebration. And then, boom, they surged U.S. beef imports in the first half. And they, up till the middle of the first half, they were more than double what they had been in 2024. If you look just at Brazil imports. And then you look at what happened when Trump put in the Brazilian or the duties on Brazil. That changed everything. All of a sudden, the Brazilian imports fell away. Now, if you look at this year, just looking at let's look at 2024, right? In 2024, the United States imported 4.6 billion pounds of beef. Argentina was a little piece of that, but not a big piece. But Mexico and Brazil were big pieces. And then you got a parasite in Mexico that stopped all those shipments. And then the tariff stopped the shipments from Brazil, which is a problem for JBS because they are, of course, a Brazilian company that has ranches and processing in Brazil. So he broke that supply chain, that vertically integrated supply chain that JBS had set up. And I'm just wondering, do you think they want their $5 million back?
You know, I don't know if they do or not, because I think they're still going to be getting beef from these other countries. Mm-hmm. They probably didn't like – I'm sure they didn't like that, you know. But there's a lot of people that think that's the reason he's talking about importing beef from Argentina, you know, and trying to lower the price of beef. I don't want to jump into all that about, you know, whether – he's got a nefarious reason for doing this, or it's political or whatever. I like to think that our president should be working for all of us. Hopefully he is.
Yep.
You know, time is going to tell. But what it really did do, and you're right, it really emphasized what the power those Packers have and people at JBS. And that's the problem with the system. When they have that much power and they can control, you know, a nation's supply of protein, essentially, they can control you. And that's one of my biggest things as a conservative. I don't want anybody controlling me. I don't want government controlling me. I don't want JBS controlling me. I don't want anybody controlling me.
Now, it's a great point. But if you think about it, so this year we will export about 3 billion pounds. We're going to import about 5. When Brazil, which was one of the major suppliers, and Mexico, a major supplier, fall away, you're looking at a spike and a shortage of beef that would be a problem for the country. So I think, to your point, Trump looking at it saying, I've got those consumers that you mentioned earlier that are such a force. I've got the ranchers. Right now, prices are high. I've got to get the supply coming in. And we've got this friend in Argentina, and Brazil's not our friend. Mexico's shut out. This is sort of a logical answer. If they bring in the same amount, if we just import 5 billion pounds of beef, it is not a change in the market at all. It's just satisfying the demand we have. And when you look at the decline in the herd and the decline in the processing, we can't possibly fill that gap with domestic beef. There is no option to supply domestic beef to fill the hole left by Mexico and Brazil exiting the U.S. market. Is that right?
That is right. And I will tell you, after going through all of this and listening to everybody's sides and looking at it all, I don't think any of us ranchers have a problem with importing a little beef from Argentina, especially if we keep the Mexican border shut with that screwworm deal. That could hurt us long term 1,000 times more than any Argentina beef coming through.
Oh yeah.
And I do think if we didn't do something to at least start talking about this issue and trying to figure out a long term solution to this shortage,
yep,
then we would be in a bad spot, because consumers are going to stop. We don't want that either.
That's right. There's a path forward that's clear. We'll hit this again. Maybe we'll have you back, but we'll hit this again. But it's regulation getting cleaned up. It's rebuilding the herd. It's fixing the market that way and breaking up this oligopoly of the 85%. Steve, thanks so much for joining us on the Conservative Voice on WWE in Philadelphia. Appreciate your insights, and it's going to be interesting to see where this beef war goes from here. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate you all.
Thank you.